And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Lights out and away we ayo. Welcome to No Breaks, a Formula One podcast from the No Dunks Inc. Classic Factory, proudly a part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Whether you're joining us live in the Slipstream team here on YouTube or listening to the podcast later, thank you very, very much. I'm your host, Trey Kirby. I'm joined today by our local F1 expert and a man who prefers Airheads to Starburst, Graydon Gordian.
Yeah, I do. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I think
that's
they're
true,
delicious.
Sure Airheads.
I think they're delicious, and I think people don't appreciate Airheads enough.
We've also got our team principal on the pit wall making the right calls. JD, which do you prefer, Airheads or Starburst?
You know, I kind of hate them both, to be honest. If I had gun to my head, Airhead.
Okay. Yeah. You had a lot of Airheads here in the Classic Factory. I believe you're the one that brought them here. That's kind of where this all started. Why did you purchase so
well,
many?
Well, they were the only thing left for Halloween. Okay. And we had a total of two trick-or-treaters here at Halloween. So we had just that whole basket. But you guys went to town on them.
Oh, yeah. The first time I realized they're here, I took like several home with me.
You were so excited, though, that I passed on that excitement to everybody else, and yeah. There's basically been a run on Airheads out of the basket.
What can I say?
Since.
It's a momentum candy. It's like people get excited, and you know, it just doesn't stop.
Yes, but hearing the way JD acquired them, it makes me think these shouldn't be one of the last candies available out there. We should be pulling Airheads off the shelves at the same time as Starburst, at the very least. Yeah, let us know in the Slipstream team or down below in the comments whether you prefer Airheads or Starburst. The most important question of the day, JK, we're talking about the Brazilian Grand Prix. Pretty exciting weekend we had, Graydon.
I would say it was a great weekend, and we needed a good bounce-back weekend after what was the most boring race of the year.
Yeah, no doubt.
So we needed a bounce-back weekend. And we got one.
I feel like we had Spice Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Every one of them was good, watchable, had fun, weird, unexpected stuff happen, in my opinion.
I will say, though, Friday night, we saw each other at a Shabbat dinner.
We did.
And I felt like an absolute fool for forgetting that there was even quali on Friday. I had no takes at the dinner table.
There were no, great. You had no dinner time takes. There was, but to talk about quali, I mean, first and foremost, it was so wonderful to see Kevin Magnussen on pole. So wonderful to see Gunther Steiner celebrating in the wake of his pole. It is far and away the worst weekend to get pole, that of a sprint race, if you're like a midfield or like a lower midfield team, like to like somehow sneak into pole. That sucks for them, but still tons of fun. Really exciting to see it upended like that. And also, yet another instance, just the whole, all of qualifying was weird, a rainy qualifying, but you had more Ferrari blunders. They were like unclear what tires they were going to put on. They were running in and out of the garage, you know, back and forth to Charles's car. And then going into Q3, he was the only one on inters. Everyone else was on softs. He didn't get he didn't even get a lap time in, I think, in the end. So he started 10th, which at the time I had said, we just saw it. Ferrari just cost Charles Leclerc P2 in the championship. Mm-hmm. At the time, I thought, he's toast. It's done. Like, he's starting so far. Even if he makes up ground in the sprint, it's like they blew it. They've blown it yet again. But
got a little helping hand later on in the weekend.
It wouldn't be as simple as that.
Yeah, the big story, no doubt, from Friday was Kevin Magnussen getting his first pole of his career. I saw on Reddit today that this is the most first-timers to win a pole position during a season since 1979. I don't know if you know
is
any
that,
of the drivers.
So is that – so because we've had George Russell.
Russell.
Carlos Sainz.
Yep.
Kevin Magnussen. Perez. Yeah. And then is that all of our first time four pole guys?
Yeah, I think it's
that's
those
it.
Four.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, so that was cool.
Four is a lot.
And even though they do the sprint race on Saturday, it still counts as a pole position.
Which
for
I
Magnussen.
Think it should. I actually don't know if I feel strongly either way. It's you know what? I appreciate that they just made a call because at least we know what to say now. Like last season, yeah. It was confusing and you never knew what to call it. So at least now we know how to refer to winning qualifying on a sprint weekend.
Yeah, and so, yeah, it was called first on pole. It was a call to pole position for Magnus, and I'm with you. I don't really have a take either way on that. I'm just glad to know we can call it a pole.
You know
we
what?
Can call it a pole for Kevin.
You know what bums me out, though? It is a pole, and it is a pole for Kevin, but then, of course, starting on pole, you know, we can go to Saturday in the sprint race. He has a good start, you know, controls, makes it in the first corner ahead of Verstappen and maintains his lead throughout the first lap and ends up, you know, leading a lap. Mm-hmm. Sadly, this is the first time Haas has ever led a lap, but not a Grand Prix lap. And that was annoying. Groffy pointed that out, that they
funny.
Still have never led a Grand Prix lap because it's not a Grand Prix. And I was like, that sucks.
That does suck, kind of.
Yeah, that's like
funny,
a
though.
Huge bummer.
Yeah.
I really wish that. Yeah, so that was not ideal.
One of the takes I remember from you Friday night, having chatted a little bit about how mixed up the grid was going to be for Saturday, you said, this is why I'm coming in hot on Tuesday saying I hate sprint races. I hate them so much because, we could have had Kevin Magnussen leading a lap of a Grand Prix rather than a sprint race. That being said, we had ourselves a solid little sprint race on Saturday, Green.
It's true. Friday night when we were at dinner, I was hating because I had thought we did – because we got a really jumbled up grid from qualifying. And I was like, this is the fun of qualifying is when it all goes awry and people don't start in their natural order. But the sprint race was probably the best one we've had to date. You know, Brazil has actually now delivered two really good sprint races.
Yeah.
I would say the last 2 years in a row, but this one I think is probably my favorite of what the six odd we've had over the last two seasons. I mean, you just saw tons of overtaking. You saw what all the way from the bat, Mick Schumacher starting 20th, his teammate starting first. You saw Mick Schumacher make up eight places. You saw, you know, Leclerc make up, I think, five or six places, mm-hmm. I think, you know, several places. You saw Verstappen take the lead and then proceed to finish fourth, which I thought was astounding that he got overtaken by Russell, Sainz, and Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the medium tire was just a terrible choice there by them, but it was just not at all what you'd expect. When Verstappen eventually passed K-Mag and took over first, it just felt like we were going to settle into yet another Verstappen sprint win,
sure.
Which he has always been excellent at, right? And it's anything but. So, you know, revived my faith in the sprint race ever so slightly.
Yeah, I thought Croft and Brundle made a pretty solid point that they have to do it on tracks where there are multiple overtaking opportunities and a pretty fast track in general. Like, it just makes for things happening. And also, I wonder if having the sprint race after the championship has been decided, maybe Red Bull's not as much into these races. Maybe teams are a little bit more risky rather than trying to save the car for later on in the year. I don't know, but it ended up making for a cool Saturday. And like you're saying, this was probably – it was at least the best sprint race this season. Maybe the best one we've seen so far. So pretty good Saturday.
And you saw – it wasn't just at the top of the grid, right, where you saw excitement. Like you saw a crazy move by – Lance Stroll to defend from his teammate Sebastian Vettel that he ended up taking a penalty in the main race during. You saw the Alpine guys, you know, touch not once but twice, you know, in the opening, forcing Alonso to have to pit early and start from the very back of the grid to take a new wing, but also then eventually, I guess Esteban Ocon's car caught on fire. In general, Alpine had a very eventful
weird
Saturday.
Weekend.
Yeah,
very crazy weekend. For
yeah, me. It was wild. But in general, it wasn't just that we saw not the podium places, but the top two, who was going to start in the top two, top three rows was shuffling the entire time. It was up and down the grid. People were shuffling around, which was awesome and what you want to see out there. And I think, yet again, we've said this many times, but I'll say it maybe not for the last time, but perhaps for the last time. I think evidence that the new cars, the new regs are working to some degree, right? Overtaking is more plentiful. The cars follow each other more closely. It's more competitive. They're making strides in that area.
So I just wish I knew the difference between dirty air and a slipstream, you know?
My gosh. We are going to...
Stay tuned.
Uh-oh.
Stay tuned, suckers. Oh, lots to talk about from Friday and Saturday. But man, Sunday, what a race. Let's take a look at the point scores from Brazil. Here's your top 10. What's that, Graydon? Who's that in first place?
Oh.
George Russell?
My Beamish boy.
In the Mercedes? Who's that in second place? Lewis Hamilton in the Mercedes? A Mercedes 1-2 in Brazil.
Incredible.
First ever Grand Prix win for George Russell. Very, very cool. Carlos Sainz comes in third. Charles Leclerc finished in P4. He's followed by Fernando Alonso in fifth. A little controversy coming up here. Max Verstappen finished P6 for Red Bull. One spot ahead of his teammate Sergio Perez. We'll get into that whole kerfuffle a little bit later. Esteban Ocon finished eighth for Alpine. Valtteri Bottas finished in ninth, and Lance Stroll took home the final point for finishing 10th for Aston Martin down there. Let's start with the winner, though, George Russell, his first Grand Prix win. First Mercedes 1-2 since last season?
Actually, I want to say they said maybe 2020.
2020 season?
I want to say actually
Abu Dhabi, is that what they said?
Maybe. Yeah. Well, wait, no. 2020 Abu Dhabi, Max won because it was the last race of the year. Right. So it wasn't that. But I want to say maybe they didn't actually do a 1-2 last year. There were so many races last year in which the top two finishers were Max and Hamilton.
Totally. Yeah, exactly. Right. But yeah. Russell does win this one. Had a great race. He was in front for basically the entirety of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And honestly, like, they had two safety cars. He nailed the restart both times. And that was pretty much his race.
We also saw the sort of strategic just – kind of like confidence, excellence, execution that you expect from Mercedes when they are at the front. They haven't lost their fastball on understanding how to control a race, making strategic decisions with confidence. They still have like that winning mentality. They didn't, you know, get the yips because they were out there. You know, everybody executed at a high level, both on the pit wall and in the cars. And yeah, they brought it home. I mean, well deserved from Russell, really an inevitability. I mean, it was only a matter of time before he did this. I actually didn't think it would be this weekend. I had thought, if you had asked me, I would say, well, this car's the best opportunity for this car is going to be Mexico City, and if they didn't get it done there, they weren't going to get it done. But the reality is the Mercedes looked really fast. The Ferrari looked fast too, actually. The top three cars didn't have huge gaps between them. I mean, the Mercedes was clearly the quickest out there, but the delta between the three of them came down a lot this race, which is exciting, and I think bodes well for next season and seeing a – you know, a season where it's not, you know, going into this, this is the first time anybody but Red Bull or Ferrari has even won a race. Mm-hmm. And I think Ferrari has only won, what, four of those. So it's been such a dominant season by Red Bull. I think the hints that next year could be way more competitive and way more messy in a good way are there. So.
Yeah, I think that's definitely right. It's kind of also interesting, I think, that the best, you know, standings race this season has turned into P2 in the championship between Mercedes and Ferrari. Like,
yeah, it's close.
Ferrari was pretty dominant first half of the season. Mercedes has been maybe the best challenger to Red Bull since the second half of the season, and they were really, really good in Brazil. Though I did think it was kind of funny that, A, Toto Wolff wasn't there. They were having to FaceTime him afterwards, which was very funny to see, like, Lewis Hamilton FaceTiming Toto Wolff. I just thought that was hilarious. And also, they couldn't really figure out why their car was so dominant. They're like, we thought we'd do good. We didn't know we were going to do this good. We probably won't be as good next week. But at least they got the win when they could.
Uh-huh.
Though I will say, a little bit of a bummer. It doesn't feel like Lewis Hamilton's going to get a win this year, because this would have been the race that he could win with the Mercedes being such a good car at Interlagos there. But a collision between Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton. Throwback to 2021. First lap after the first safety car restart. I saw after the race that Max said that cost Lewis the win. It only cost me 5 seconds, but he would have won if we didn't touch each other.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll probably end up discussing multiple post-race comments by Max Verstappen today, but that definitely felt like a little bit of salt in the wound there after last season and after what was a pretty aggressive dive by Max. He got the 5 second penalty, very deservedly so. I thought the door was not open, and he just went for it anyways. I think that, and honestly, I mean, I guess I don't really know what's in his head, but it kind of felt like his thinking was, we don't have the pace this weekend, so my risk tolerance is going way up, and if it means that I crash into this guy that clearly I despise, so be it. Like, I mean, I'm not saying he was trying to take Hamilton out of the race as much as he truly didn't care, like, the outcome of that die. Like, it was like, whatever, it doesn't matter.
I got two titles already.
I'm going for it.
What do I care? I'm going to send it right here. I'm in front for a little bit. Maybe that counts. And even I think Brundle on the call thought it was going to go the other way. It seemed to me that he thought Hamilton would be the one getting the penalty. But I guess the ruling came down that Verstappen was mostly at fault, not 100% at fault. And I mean, it could have gone either way.
And they a 5 second penalty is a comparatively light one for what was a pretty, you know, solid incident.
Yeah.
Not at the, I know it's after a restart, but they don't give as much grace after a restart as they do at the very start of a race, where they are a little bit more, you know, flexible with folks. Although they didn't, I guess, they weren't that flexible with Daniel Ricciardo, who was the cause of the restart, knocking Kevin Magnussen out of the race entirely, as well as himself, because he has a penalty, I believe, next weekend. That definitely affected. When you look at where Hamilton finished, where you look at the work he did over the rest of the race, you know, it definitely impacted his race. Do I think he would have finished on the top step? George still drove a great race, and the car, that Merc, really does love clean air. So part of me thinks him being out in first with a DRS gap, with a gap, you know, a plus 1 second gap to the car behind him, he probably was in control of his own destiny in either instance. You know, but Hamilton is probably putting more pressure on him than he was able to, realistically.
And it sounds like they would have been able to race if they would have actually gotten close to each other, as long as they were respectful about it.
Yeah, which I think is also really interesting to hear. You know, historically, that hasn't necessarily been the case. You know, obviously, him and Bottas, that isn't really the attitude they took. You know, maybe they would have said, oh, you guys can race, but I think that, you know, the subtext was always, you know, that Hamilton needs to be the one to win that race. I think, you know, but it seems like that's not the case here. And you know, but it's also different. They're fighting for they're in such a different situation in terms of what they're fighting for. And we're talking about Russell's first ever race, which to favor Hamilton there, to do something that, I mean, I don't know, that would be such a harsh move.
Oh, totally. Especially, like, to get him this record of, you know, winning a race in every single season that he's
over a guy winning for the first time. Yeah. No, I didn't really think they were going to ever do that, to be honest. But
yeah, so, I mean, speaking of teammates, let's get to the biggest story from the weekend. You would think that Max Verstappen running into Lewis Hamilton would probably be the biggest flap that Max Verstappen would have, but hardly the case. Late in the race in this one, Red Bull sends Max Verstappen past Sergio Perez. I think he was chasing down Fernando Alonso.
He was at the time chasing down Fernando Alonso, but they told him, you need to get to Leclerc. You've got to go run Leclerc down and get in front of him to knock Leclerc back a position, or else...
Or else we're switching it back.
I think that was the suggestion.
And it sounded like the same message was relayed to Sergio Perez as well, because right now he's obviously in a fight for P2 in the Drivers' Championship. But when it became clear that Verstappen couldn't make any more progress through the field, they asked him to give back his position to Perez on the last lap, and he said, nope.
He said no.
I've got reasons. I ain't switching back, buddy.
And I told you not to ask me that.
Don't ever
again.
Ask again.
Don't ever ask that again. And to which Sergio Perez responded, that shows who he really is.
Yeah.
These are These are fighting words,
these
my
are fighting
friend.
Words.
These are
what these are you say harsh these are fighting words. Do you think they aren't going to be able to put it behind them and act like grown-ups, which is what Perez is hoping for?
I think it's complicated, and it is a slippery slope here. I think if you look at the amount of times that Perez had to sacrifice his own good, leave points on the board, spoil races to help out Max last season, if they find themselves in a closer title fight and he's being asked to do that again, is he gonna be as cooperative, be as self-sacrificing? The answer might be no. You know, he's gonna have more of a chip on his shoulder about it. And Perez is not afraid to spar with the guys he's driving alongside. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had a famously, you know, combative relationship with Esteban Ocon, you know, back in the Racing Point days or the Force India days or, you know, whatever. Like, so they were – he's not afraid to go toe-to-toe with the guys alongside. You know, obviously he can't match Max, you know, on pace. He's not going to, you know, really unseat him as the number one driver at Red Bull. It's not even really a plausibility. But him being uncooperative – it could just be – it's an unnecessary complication, and I think this is a dumb move by Max because, in actuality, keeping this guy in your pocket, making him happy, making him willing to, like, lay down and help you out when times are tight is so much more valuable than, you know, this grudge that he's holding over a Monaco-related accusation.
You do believe that it was because of Monaco and Sergio binned it after he had
this is the up? Rumor, right? Is that he binned it coming around the corner into the corner right before the tunnel, you know, where he crashed in qualifying to preserve his starting place. And if you look at the telemetry, he does like slam on the gas at a moment where you'd be braking. So either he made a pretty big mistake or he binned it. Yeah. I mean, it's I mean, oh, like,
man,
on purpose.
My bad. So, I floored it into the wall.
Yeah. My bad. Accident. I hit the, yeah. I slammed on the gas going through a 90-degree turner that you take, you know, in like first gear or something. Right. So it's like, but even if he did that, like, you're so spiteful about that. You're so mad about that this many months later that you're not going to help out your teammate. All of the things he's done for you, all of the defending in Abu Dhabi last year that is the entire reason you even made up the gap to Lewis in the first place, all that goes out the window. I don't know. I think it's bullshit.
It definitely is, but it's like very much Max Verstappen to be holding that kind of grudge, because obviously him and Lewis Hamilton still have a grudge against each other, even though they haven't really been competing with each other this year. And honestly, like, I see Verstappen's point of view a little bit with regards to Monaco. He's like, we're both trying to win every race at that point. And Perez knows that if he starts Monaco on pole, he's got a great chance to win, right? Yeah. So that's why Verstappen's upset. But also, he should have a little bit of self-awareness. You didn't win any titles with anybody else as your number two driver. Perez was instrumental in getting the title in 2021. The car has been dominant in 2022, but he's definitely the best second driver that Red Bull has had alongside Verstappen. But for Perez, my guess is that he will act like a grown-up and he will do the assisting come next season, because if a push comes to shove, it ain't Sergio Perez who's sticking around in Red Bull.
Oh,
right?
For sure.
They
for
will
sure.
never fire Verstappen. They would let him talk trash to Perez every single race.
Oh, for sure. No two ways about it. There's no doubt who the favorite son is in that paddock. You know, no two ways about it. And Perez, you know, lest we forget, would be out of Formula One were it not for Red Bull.
True.
The options were to keep Albon or Perez, and Perez wouldn't have a seat at all, and maybe wouldn't be back this year. We don't know. You know, it's definitely, you know, this is his meal ticket here for a minute, and so he has incentive to play ball, but you also can't ask him to not be a competitor, and it's just it's the difference between being like a competitor and being a leader, maybe. Mm-hmm. I might describe it as. It sounds a little boomerish to start talking about leadership or something like that, right? But I just I think it's the kind of thing that actually you would have seen other drivers who are clear number one drivers potentially handle differently.
Yeah, I mean, I think you even saw with the way Lewis Hamilton and George Russell were interacting post-race and how excited Hamilton was and how excited he was to be supporting him.
Yeah,
certainly there are different ways of going about it. Do you believe Verstappen when he said that if there's an opportunity for him to help Perez in Abu Dhabi, he'll do it?
I really hope we get it. Oh, God, that would be so good.
Put your money where your mouth is, Max.
I would love it if the situation comes up and something's got to happen there.
There was like a bit of a transactional sort of nature, I feel like, to it, where maybe Verstappen is like, okay, you screwed me at Monaco. I screwed you in Brazil.
It's one
now
to
we're even.
Yeah, I mean, Verstappen might see it as even. He was talking about it like they're even. I just wonder whether in Perez's... There's a difference in Perez saying, we'll be adults from here on out, and him saying, I agree, we're even. Like, I don't think Perez thinks they're even. You know, like, I think they're I don't know. I hope we get a scenario that puts that promise to the test.
Oh, definitely. They gotta end up in somehow in the same order with going backwards and forwards.
Yeah, it would be great.
Should be very, very cool. But man, just when Max Verstappen was like almost flying under the radar this season. Like, he hasn't had any real big dust-ups, right?
No.
He's had a dominant championship, back-to-back titles. We're going to his GQ cover in a little bit here, but in the very, very end of the season, one race left, just pull out the villain card. Just remind me.
Yeah, this was a strong villain card weekend for him.
The other thing I wanted to talk to you, Graydon, literally just a question for you. What happened with Yuki Tsunoda during the safety car at the end of the race?
Yeah, I think it's a great question because I was sitting there seeing Yuki in front of and then kind of alongside Carlos Sainz before the safety car restart at the very end of the race after Lando Norris's, engine failure or whatever, electrical failure, I think is what it actually was. But and I thought, what the hell is he doing? Like, they told the lapped cars to unlap himself. Like, why is he in the middle of all
just
this?
Just hanging out.
I tweeted at the time. I was like, did he not unlap himself? What's he doing? I thought maybe it was Yuki being like a weirdo. I mean, it's not like beyond like, Yuki every once in a while does like somewhat like inexplicable things. Like, so I thought maybe he's just bungling this. But no, okay, so. Incredibly, I went and researched this because I have to figure out what happened. He and Russell at the start of the safety car he is lapped. And every lapped car now after Abu Dhabi last year, it's a digital system that monitors it and communicates to all of the lapped cars that they can all unlap themselves. So there's no sort of like human element or discretion behind which ones do and don't.
Sure.
Things like that. So it's to prevent an Abu Dhabi like scenario again. Russell and Tsunoda both go into the pits for new tires during the safety car. And during that, because Russell, where Russell pits, Tsunoda passes him in the pit lane and technically unlaps himself in the pit lane, pits. Of course, Russell comes out, takes position in front of him again, I believe. I don't believe Tsunoda came out of the pits in front of him, but he briefly unlapped himself, which confused the computer. And then when they were all out there, it never communicated to him to unlap himself. His engineer was telling him, yeah, you're going to be able to unlap yourself. Of course, he expected to. And then, in fact, he was trading places back and forth with Carlos Sainz. They were confused because he overtook Carlos Sainz, and then he let Carlos Sainz take it back. And then this ended up impacting the Ferrari's decision-making. Everybody was giving Ferrari not the same amount of crap about the Verstappen-Perez thing. I think it was different, you know. Leclerc was never in front of Sainz, and Sainz was much further in front of Leclerc. So I don't think we were talking about a podium here, so I don't think the expectation was as much that Sainz would give up the spot. But Ferrari was like, we can't do it. And their concern was they were going to get a 5-second penalty for overtaking under the safety car because they drove back past around Tsunoda. They thought maybe they had broken a rule by going past him. They didn't know whether they would get a penalty or not. So they were like, we can't slow up for you, Charles. Like, because he was 5 seconds ahead of Alonso behind him, and he was like, "We can't slow up, or else we might risk the podium position, and or the spot entirely." And so it ended up having weird ripple effects.
Yeah, I guess.
But an odd one that at the time I noted, and I thought, "What the hell is going on?" And ruined Tsunoda's race because the guys in front of him, Albon and Latifi, I believe, I'm not sure they pitted. I have to go back and look. I don't think they pitted for new tires. Tsunoda was on new tires.
Right.
Probably would have overtaken them. Probably would have overtaken. Wouldn't have gotten to the points, but would have had a more exciting last few laps. So.
Yeah, and he ended up finishing last. So a tough one.
That's
tough
a bummer.
One.
Yeah,
tough
because
one
he was
Yuki.
The only guy like a lap. He probably finished last as the only lapped car.
Yeah, exactly. One lap like, behind.
Yeah.
And it's just because the transponder doesn't work on pit row.
Or they just got confused. It was like, oh, he's unlapped himself, and then by the time they came back out, they just presumed. I don't know. Yeah,
it's like how the bird scooters don't work on the belt line. You'll be riding your bird scooter, you get over to the belt line, it just shuts off.
Do they don't work on the belt line?
Well, we don't need them on the belt line. Come on, man. It's wild enough.
I mean, I haven't ridden a bird scooter in years.
Don't know if they still have them out and about, but I remember at one point they didn't work on the belt line.
Okay. I remember at one point they did, but you would get on the belt line and it would slow down dramatically. It was like
restrictor plates.
It was restricted. It was throttled on the belt line. You couldn't give it full beans out there.
You think you could beat me in a bird scooter race?
Wow, great.
I don't
question.
Know if they have I don't know if there's a way to drive it faster or slower.
Yeah, could I get low and get some aerodynamic advantage or something? I don't know. You're going to create more wind resistance.
A lot of drag.
You're more drag. You're much draggy. Taller than I am, so you're going to create a lot more wind resistance. So I'm going to say maybe.
Yeah, maybe that would be some off-season content. Bring on a bird scooter race between me and you. How about surprises and disappointments from Brazil? We've touched on a lot of the big stories. What about anything else that stuck
okay,
out to
surprises.
You?
I mean, I got a few. I mean, first of all, Leclerc coming back to get fourth. Pretty big surprise when he made contact with Norris and spun into the wall. I thought,
not good.
Well, I had said, well, there goes second place. I had said that in qualifying. And then I said, okay, but now really there goes second place. He just went flying into the wall.
I couldn't believe he was able to continue.
I couldn't either. I just presumed for the moment right after that he was out of the race.
Yeah, barely even a stoppage. They're like, yep, he's out, just driving
around
now.
Yeah, they didn't – maybe there was a yellow in that sector for a moment.
Second,
it was crazy actually that he just kept on going. I much less made it all the way back to fourth because at the time he was running in third, and I thought – oh, this is he's going to be fighting for a podium here. He's going to be fighting Perez here. This is he's really in this race right now. And I thought, oh, God damn it, he's really out of this race. He's out again, so that was definitely a surprise, a pleasant surprise, because now they're neck and neck heading into the final race, him and Perez, which makes for some excitement. And probably my other big one there has got to be Alonso finishing fifth in the top five and double points from Alpine in general, who had a very bad sprint race, or starting in a really bad situation for the sprint race, especially Alonso. You did not expect to see them both in the points, and I certainly didn't expect to see Alonso finishing ahead of both Red Bulls.
I mean,
you just wouldn't guess that.
Yeah, really great weekend it ended up being for Alpine, and now they are looking – they're looking pretty good for P4 in the Constructors. We'll see what happens. But with McLaren both DNFing
– that's got to be on your disappointments.
That's got to be on the disappointments. An early crash for Daniel Ricciardo. Lando never looked fast and also was sick. And I think it was even his birthday weekend. So either he was partying or he just had a stomach virus. They're going around.
Yeah, they're going around.
I'll also say a little bit of a disappointment race-wise for Kevin Magnussen. He started on pole. Well, he won pole position. He started on pole for the sprint race. Did get a point. Spun out on the first lap due to the collision with Daniel Ricciardo. And apparently Daniel Ricciardo took the only available seat in the safety car to get him back. So Kevin Magnussen was just stranded there. For laps and laps because they forgot to come back and get him.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Wow.
Tough
also,
stuff.
First of all, brutal. Second of all, wait, there's only one. It's like a little SUV.
Well, they got to have a camera.
How many?
I don't know. I only saw a handful of tweets about this, but I don't know. Apparently.
That's a bummer.
Apparently, Ricardo called shotgun and sorry.
Ricardo's the guy who sent him out of the race. I feel like at that point, you got to give the guy.
That should be part of the penalty.
Is like he gets to drive back.
Yeah, they get first seat in the car. Yeah. I actually like that.
Yeah, those are the McLaren one has got to be top of the list of disappointments. Two DNFs in a race where you needed to make it happen if you were going to come in fourth. The other one that for me was a bit of a bummer, it kind of he quietly faded away, but was Vettel, who was actually having a great race at one point, was battling Valtteri Bottas for P5, was right in the mix there. And then during the safety car, I think he didn't, in order to maintain position, he didn't pit for new tires, which that didn't screw up everybody's race. It didn't screw up Leclerc's race. It didn't screw up Hamilton's, but it did for some of them. It really cost him. He got gobbled up by guys behind him.
Yeah, we've talked about that a ton with, like, if you're in first place, do you stay out for track position or do you change your tires so you're a little bit faster? It never works out if you stay for track position.
Yeah, it honestly, in this instance, the only reason it worked for the guys it did, you know, who did stay out, like Leclerc or Hamilton, I think both did stay out, is only because they had pitted fairly recently, mm-hmm. and they had softs on that had plenty of life left in them, so it wasn't the end of the world, as opposed to getting caught in these scenarios where you're on 30 lap old tires and you're just trying to hang on or something. But I mean, we saw what happened with Perez. I mean, Perez, you know, I believe stayed out. I believe.
Right.
And on his mediums, and that was
a
mess. Oh, it was a mess. He got totally crushed after the safety car. So
that's almost everything from the Brazilian Grand Prix. Only one thing left to do, and that's hand out our beans. Full Beans Driver of the Weekend goes to the driver who really went for it out there on the course. There's a lot of driving this weekend, Graydon. So who shall receive your beans?
Beans. I think for me, I'm going to go with the obvious choice. I'm going to go with George Russell. I thought he had, you know, it's his first race win. And it's not just the fact that I don't think he technically did. Maybe when he pitted, he gave up first. But he, for all intents and purposes, led, you know, end to end. You know, was totally in control of the race. But he also had a spectacular race on Saturday, a great sprint race. He had a great overall weekend. Really put it together. A very deserving win for Georgie boy. I'm proud of him.
Sweet Georgie boy.
Sweet Georgie boy. My sweet lad.
This is an easy beans. You got to give it to George Russell, the most British man alive. You're not going to give him beans when he wins his first Grand Prix?
No. I mean, this guy deserves a hearty helping of beans. The Brits love beans. He's extremely British. This guy needs it. The only other person I considered was Alonso coming back from
I think he started 17th,
or
right?
17th, something like that. You know, on the second to last row of the whole thing to finish fifth is a terrific drive. I mean, Alonso had a terrific drive, but I'm still giving it to George.
Yeah, got to go to George Russell for getting the win, and man, he was super emotional afterwards. He was, I feel like he was soaking wet from sweat. Like, he was one of the sweatiest guys I've ever seen after a race, but also his face was soaking wet with tears of joy and happiness.
Oh, gosh. And did you know, for the first time in the history of Formula One, when he took the podium, they played God Save the King.
Ooh,
because we've never had a British person win when there was a king. It's always been God Save the Queen during the entire history of Formula One.
That's pretty crazy.
For the first time ever. So how about that? A little Britain fact for you folks.
There's a little Britain fact for you folks. Put it in your pocket. And when we come back, we're going to talk about news.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Back with the Breaky Boys. We just broke down the 2022 Brazilian Grand Prix. And now we're going to play a little bit of Gas or Brakes. Oh, yeah. Gas or Brakes. Great. And I'll give you a topic, a newsy Formula One topic. You tell me if you like it, if you think it's good, that's gas. If you don't like it, pump the brakes, buddy. Big almost news out of Ferrari. Gazzetta dello Sport, sorry, is reporting that Mattia Binotto will be replaced as Ferrari's team principal by Alfa Romeo engineer Fred Vasseur, though Ferrari have dismissed the report as, quote, totally without foundation. So Binotto has been with Ferrari as the team principal since January 2019. What do you make of them potentially replacing him as team principal?
I am gas on this. I think that
gas it's, it up.
I think we should, yeah, like just slam on the gas. I do think that I like Binotto, and I think he has got a lot of talent. I think especially as a technical mind, he's a really strong talent, and you've seen that with the improvements to the car. He's basically delivered on, you know, his promise in that regards. But as a true team principal, as a manager of people, of strategy, you know, as a leader, I don't think he's got the stuff. And I think that Frederic Vasseur is a step up there. I actually really like Vasseur. I think he's done a very good job as the team principal of Alfa Romeo. And I think he's got the sort of combination of technical abilities, because he is himself, you know, a trained aeronautics engineer and has a really sharp mind on that side of things. But he's also a great leader of people who understands how to get high performance out of people. He has had so much success at the more junior levels, and he has actually been Leclerc's team principal prior, before Leclerc at Alfa Romeo. I just think his like quiet competence, his like the way that their team, you know, he just gets people to execute in an unfussy, serious manner. It's what Ferrari needs. It's like he's not a Ferrari man, and I think that's a good thing. You know, so it's like as a cultural counterbalance. But we'll also see if it goes down. I would very strongly bet. I believe this rumor is true. I believe this is true, and they just didn't want it to leak before Abu Dhabi. They didn't want it to leak before the end of the season.
Because what's the point?
Yeah, and they're just saving face for a few weeks. But I believe that this is going to happen.
Yeah, it definitely seems like it should happen. And honestly, with the way Ferrari's season has went, maybe not a huge surprise. You know, they came out of the gate strong, looked like a championship challenger, and then have settled into a solid second place as the season has gone on. You say that Binotto has been instrumental in getting the car back to a top-of-the-grid kind of car. Do you think this has been a successful tenure for him? I know Ferrari wants to be winning championships, but they were also down and out pretty recently.
Yeah, I mean, successful tenure is hard to say because he also is the guy who was leading the team when, you know, there were accusations of cheating with the way the engine was constructed. That was a big part of the setback, you know?
Sure.
It's like, okay. So in some sense, he had a role to play in them taking a huge step back all the way down as low as sixth in the, you know, in the final standings, you know, versus where they're at today. So it's definitely, but yeah, I mean, listen, Binotto, I do think has done a good job. They don't have the same leadership stability at Ferrari that they have at Red Bull or Mercedes. They've seen a little bit more turnover, and the heat's a little bit hot, you know, hotter. It reminds me of being the coach of the Lakers or the manager of the Yankees or something like that, right? Even when they're succeeding or not succeeding, like, the expectation is always, you know, we need a championship and we need it yesterday.
Yeah.
It's even when they haven't delivered one in a while, like, that expectation never changes. You know, so that, and that is a complicated environment to operate in. So I don't think that, I think, you know, you can't call his tenure, if it is over, a success, in the sense that they didn't achieve what they set out to do. However, it's I do think he did a pretty good job, you know, all things considered. That being said, I do think that the mistakes are that we've seen this year, they are cultural, they do come down from the top. His response to the mistakes they've made on track, his attitude about them and what does or doesn't need to change have been misguided. I think his tone has been off, and I think they need somebody who's a better leader of people, which Vasseur, I believe, will be. They could have taken, you know, did they take a look at Mike Crack? I don't know if my crack's been that visible. Did they take a look at?
No, you're doing good, man.
Did they take
you're
a look?
Fine right now.
Did they take a look at?
Pants fit well.
You know, some of the other team principals out there. I don't know, but Vasura feels like the obvious choice.
Yeah, I guess he does have a little bit of a Ferrari connection, right? With the engines in the Alfa Romeo, he's got some knowledge about since they drive Ferrari engines. Like you're saying, success at lower levels as as a team principal, which should surely help. How much of the blame does Mattia Binotto get for Ferrari exceeding the cost cap this year? Is that a thing?
Or like running up again, like having to...
Yeah, at least getting close enough to the point where he says they have had to stop development on this year's car, which is why Mercedes is caught up and maybe even
seems to be the
case. They've
been
slower in the second half.
I mean, they've inarguably lost pace compared to everybody else over the second half of the season, so it does seem as if they did likely stop developing this car.
Is that a team principal thing?
Yeah. I mean, I think fundamentally, yeah. I mean... It's all complicated. You're talking about big, complex organizations where money is being spent on all types of things. So financial management at a F1 team, especially with these Byzantine financial regulations, is not easy. But yes, I do think the buck stops with him. And, you know, why have Red Bull and Mercedes been able to continue to push the pace of their cars throughout the entire season, presuming that they are obeying the cost cap rules, I guess, is a presumption I'm going to currently make. You know, Ferrari clearly is, because they said, well, we got to stop spending money. They are playing by the rules, and I'm presuming everyone else is too, and yet those cars have continued to advance. So it's suboptimal. He does deserve some blame for that, for sure.
I guess we will know eventually whether or not the original reports were true, or if Ferrari decides to take a look at Mike Rack. So tune into Ass or Brakes next time to see whether that comes through. Here's some more not quite settled news yet. No announcement as of yet, but should be coming further on this week. Haas plans to replace Mick Schumacher with Nico Hülkenberg.
Yeah.
As their driver for the 2023 season, gas or brakes on Hülkenberg coming back to F1?
To be honest, like, I like Nico, but I'm a little brakes on this. I don't understand why. I get saying Mick is not panning out. He's not driven great. Magnussen's been much better. He's consistently, you know, been outperformed by Magnussen. I don't think that Schumacher's put it in the points enough. I think you've got enough evidence to say we need to move on from this guy. I don't see him taking the leap. I think that's totally fair. For me, I don't know if my backup plan is let's go get like a 35-year-old, like, you know, retired, kind of now our like go-to super sub for the sport to like come in and be this guy. What is that getting you? To me, I feel like the better – There just is young talent sitting out there, and I'm a little bit surprised Haas doesn't take a harder look, because they do have a veteran anchoring the team. You don't need that guy. I feel like you need the guy who his ceiling is really unclear. And, you know, Hülkenberg, having never even been on a podium, I mean, clearly there is a ceiling there. So I don't hate it in the sense that I like Nico. I'm glad he's back. He'll be fun to have back on the grid. I think he's a talented driver. It's not that he doesn't deserve it. It's just in all the world of options out there, it feels like not even the safe choice, like the fearful choice or something. I don't know exactly. So
yeah, it's just not inspiring.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Hülkenberg hasn't been a full-time driver since 2019. Like you're saying, he's kind of a super sub. You'll see him drive in a practice every now and then as well, but it definitely just feels almost like a step back to me for Haas to be going to two, you know, just like good veteran drivers, not dissimilar to when they had Grosjean.
Yeah, I guess it is kind of the same. I mean, maybe it's just Gunter Steiner's vibe, but maybe he just wants two competent guys that he doesn't have to, you know, feel like he's gotta, you know, educate, you know, like
sure,
mentor
probably
as much or something like that, right? I mean, he didn't seem over the moon about having super young talent when they had it. You know, he always...
And it definitely, to me, kind of felt like, with regards to Steiner and Mick, like, Mick was chosen for him, almost, rather than the other way around, Gunther being the one who's making the choice here. They're kind of like,
This guy's got a famous name. He had success in lower levels. He's driving for your team. Yeah. You should be excited about
and
it. He's
Ferrari,
like, hey, wait, why don't we just get a guy who's decent?
And Ferrari threw their weight around there too. You know, they wanted him in the league because they had thought maybe he can be the next big thing. Because he did genuinely have success at F2 and other levels.
Yeah.
So he was a champ, right? So it's not as if Schumacher's, you know, made it on name alone. But it's, you know, but they – that's – yeah, I think that – and listen, I mean, I think he'll be fine. If for them, I think if he's – Haas is interesting because it's always been something where there's always the specter that Gene Haas, the owner, will pull out of the sport.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that Gunter has got to – perform year in, year out, despite the fact that they've definitely not done that at times. You know, it's like he's got pressure to show results. And so I do think maybe having a vet guy is part of that, right? Which is, I'm not going to miss opportunities. I'm not going to waste years developing some talent just for him to get poached by a bigger team.
Sure.
This is a guy who's going to drive for me and will do at a baseline level of competence race in, race out. So in that sense, I get it. But you are right. I wouldn't call it inspired.
I think it's interesting you mentioned Ferrari because one of the questions that will come out of this is what ends up happening with Mick Schumacher. No seats available for him, but apparently he could become Mercedes reserve driver. I saw Toto Wolff said, I make no secret of the fact that the Schumacher family belongs to Mercedes and that we appreciate Mick very much. I know Michael Schumacher drove for Mercedes at the end of his career.
I mean,
do you think the Schumacher family belongs to Mercedes?
It's probably not the way I would have worded it personally.
But the team he's most associated with is
Ferrari. Yeah. It's overwhelmingly Ferrari, right? And the Schumachers still have a lot of pull inside Ferrari. It's partly why Mick Schumacher was part of the Ferrari Driver Academy. But there is a lot of affection between Toto and Michael. They were close, you know, and I do think, you know, Toto's known Mick for a long time. You know, the Schumachers are Toto's Austrian, but they are all, you know, German speaking, and it's a German branded team. So there is like, I think there's probably some closeness there, but I do think Toto is just one of these guys where he, for all of his seriousness and for all of his focus on performance, he actually does have a sort of, like, I don't say like a soft side, but like when he gets invested in someone, he cares about them. He's always made sure he's shepherded Ocon through tough times. You know, he fought to keep Russell in the sport when Williams was wavering on even retaining him, which clearly wasn't, you know, the right move long term. And then now with Mick, I mean, I think he just, you know, Toto takes care of the people that he decides to invest his emotional energy in.
Good answer.
Yeah.
That's a very good answer from you. All right. Our last little gas or brakes topic comes from GQ magazine. Max Verstappen has been named one of GQ's Men of the Year. He's going to be on the cover of GQ, and the title of the story, The Making of Max Verstappen, How F1's Most Thrilling Driver Took Over the Sport. Pretty funny timing that Max Verstappen was the Men of the Year after everything that went down on Sunday. What'd you make of this, Graydon?
I haven't read the story yet. You know, the making of Max Verstappen, I always get, you know, makes my hair bristle a tad when we talk about Max's upbringing, which is, I'm going to be polite and say perhaps, you know, not, you know, up to – it's not the manner in which I intend to parent my children. Maybe perhaps I'll say that. I'll say that like I think
not on the Max program. Huh?
No, they're not on the Max. No, I think I won't. Jos and I approach fatherhood differently. Maybe I'll put it like I always feel a little bit anxious when we start getting into the world where maybe we're praising Jos Verstappen for some of the tactics or things he did. I don't even know if they do that, but just the making of him to me always feels like we're hinting at, like, the idea of that. But I mean, it's just funny timing. But it's
probably
not surprising that he got like the GQ cover. I mean, he crushed the season, and F1 is huge now. It's like, it's, if anything, it's like this is it's very characteristic of like the crossover we've made here of like F1 into like mainstream sport, that a driver dominating F1 makes you a GQ Man of the Year. That is like the sport's like cultural centricity is like different, I would say.
Yeah.
You know?
I heard they were going to put Charles Leclerc on the cover, but they saw those pants he was wearing that were
He was
track
gonna be
pants
Charles.
And also jeans at the same time. They said, we can't do it. We're a style magazine.
They'll,
sorry.
Yeah.
We're putting in the flat brim guy.
Brutal. And, you know, it's sad. Yeah. First of all, yeah, Max's style is also not, actually.
No,
it's
no.
Actually, Max has terrible.
Headshot only.
Yeah, Max
headshot
has
only.
Bad style. Like, I don't like the flat-brimmed hat, personally. But it's also, like, he's never looks, like, sharp, in my opinion.
No, he looks like Ricky Fowler at all times. Yeah. I haven't read this yet either, but I did see that... the tagline is that Max takes inspiration for Michael Jordan.
I mean,
so you know, I was in on that. Instant command F, Jordan, looked it up. Turns out Max Verstappen liked watching The Last Dance.
Okay.
He's like, it was good. Michael Jordan, he was ruthless.
Yeah.
There's
yeah,
a little
yeah.
Jordan in Max Verstappen. I think
I mean, they're cut from the same mold. I mean, Jordan
yes.
is ruthless. I mean, yeah. they're cut from the same mold.
Michael Jordan isn't letting Steve Kerr pass him on the last lap. Even
no,
Steve
Jordan
Kerr
would
second.
Absolutely. Jordan, if they were like, hey, you got to switch places with somebody, I mean, Jordan would absolutely
no way.
Would have
no
used
way.
Much more colorful language than Max Verstappen used, probably, to say no. Like, I, you know, no way. Yeah, so.
But let us know. Gas or brakes for any of those. Somebody taking over for Mattia Binotto for Ferrari. Hulkenberg taking over for Schumacher and Max Verstappen on the cover of GQ magazine. We're going to take one more break. And when we come back, Graydon's going to explain something to us.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Back with no breaks. We just wrapped up the Brazilian Grand Prix. We've got one more race left this season.
Insane.
Feels like we just started. Feels like Ferrari yeah. was just back.
It feels like we just started. Yeah.
Right?
Just a minute ago.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like quick 25 episodes.
Just a, yeah, nothing.
Your children were this
right
big
by.
The day we started.
They were tiny. Little.
They were one inch tall when we started. But let's take a look at the Drivers and Constructors Championship standings heading into Abu Dhabi. Max Verstappen, he is a GQ Man of the Year and a title winner. He's got a massive lead. But we're looking at the race between P2 and P3. Charles Leclerc, 290 points, followed by Sergio Perez, also 290 points. He could have more. Did you know that? He could be in P2 right now,
he could
all
be
by himself.
All alone.
In P4, we've got George Russell after his first win. He's followed by Lewis Hamilton, who's followed by Carlos Sainz, Lando Norris, Esteban Ocon, Fernando Alonso, and Valtteri Bottas. They're in 10th place. In the team standings, Red Bull, also the champions. This is their first championship in a row. It's not really in a row. It's just a dot right there. But they're the champions. Ferrari in P2. They've got a 19-point lead over Mercedes for second in the Constructors' Championship. Still a race there. Also a 19-point lead for Alpine over McLaren for P4 in the championship. Alfa Romeo is in sixth, followed by Aston Martin, Haas, AlphaTauri, and Williams there, bringing up the back, number 10. So, Graydon, we've got a race for second in the championship for the drivers, second in the championship for the constructors. Do you think we'll see anything change in Abu Dhabi? Will either of those change? Will Perez pip Leclerc? Will Mercedes catch Red Bull? Ferrari, I mean.
I am going to say no. I think Leclerc pulls it out, and I think Ferrari holds on to it. I'm going to say no. I have really no idea. I mean, at the end of the day, it's like...
I agree with you.
It's so hard to, like, get, you know, to assess the outcome of just any given race, given the amount of things that can go wrong. But I will say that, you know, it does look like Red Bull... I don't know. We'll have to see what sort of adjustments they make heading into Abu Dhabi out of Brazil, because the car didn't look as strong this last weekend. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll have to see how if they can rebound from that. Mercedes actually does – I'm really curious to see how – not that I'm going to actually watch practice like I ever, but it's like I'm curious to see the times in practice, curious to watch qualifying and to see whether Mercedes, you know, feels like they can maintain their – you know – continue their success into Abu Dhabi, where a very different track than Brazil, and something where I think we'll find out.
So. Yeah, they seem to be managing expectations, saying we probably won't be as fast in Abu Dhabi as we were in Brazil. So,
and they tend to, I mean, to be honest, the Mercedes are the kings of sandbagging. I mean, they just always talk down
literally
about
always
the potential of the car, no matter what. So, you know, tough to say how much they really believe that.
You feeling knowledgeable right now?
I think I know a thing or two.
Okay, I mean,
maybe we need to skip the segment now that I know
a thing or two.
I mean,
hopefully one of the things you know is the difference between a slipstream and dirty air, because that's what I have in my notes for you're going to explain. Better be one of the two.
Well,
things.
we had a little once upon a time. I think we were going to do a segment which was called something along the lines of like Graydon Explains Things, and it's back.
He's back
because a buddy of mine was asking the other day about dirty air versus a slipstream and when cars follow closely versus when they shouldn't and why at times it's advantageous to be right behind a car versus when it's not. And I thought, gosh, you know, that's a nice little thing to explain. If you haven't been watching racing for a long time and F1 in particular, that might be confusing because it does seem to vary race to race, sure, whether or not you want to be behind somebody or not. And that's a great point. Yes. Yeah, so what are they talking about there? Which is that the cars are designed to create a lot of aerodynamic downforce, right? Those are the wings and everything. This is true even today in the era of ground effect, where there's a lot of downforce generated by the underside of the car. As air flows over the car, it helps it, you know, it pushes the car down and helps it maintain speed through corners and the like. However, this also creates drag on straights, right? It means the car moves more slowly. This is why DRS helps them pick up speed, right? The wing opens, it's now producing less drag, they pick up speed. So the idea is that if you're in a twisty course or one with lots of curves, you're going through a fast curve or even worse, a slow corner actually, and you're close behind someone, it's hard to follow as closely when you're in their quote-unquote dirty air, i.e. the air thrown off by the car, because it's disrupting the aerodynamic downforce you're able to generate. This is different than on a long straight, say, where the car in front of you is literally punching a hole in the air, reducing the drag you experience, giving people a toe. You see both of these things in Brazil, which is partly why it came up a little bit, where there's parts of the course where it's harder to follow closely behind somebody, where it's a little bit more curvy. And then there's also down that main straight, you saw guys getting real tight behind someone trying to take advantage of the slipstream they created down that main straight so they could hopefully overtake into the first corner. So you saw a good examples of both in Brazil, and you see people optimizing for different ones on different courses. You know, a classic course where people really optimize for the toe, really optimize to take advantage of slipstreams is Monza. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most famous for that. Oppositely, Hungary is one where people really are concerned about clean air, not driving in dirty air, because it is if there's a lot of corners, a lot of slow corners, and they want to be generating as much downforce as possible. So that is the that is why you see people that
come on.
This is so, for example, in you know, you might see, yeah, in Days of Thunder, when you see him slingshot past his rivals,
Cole Trickle.
Yeah, I almost said Colt.
He did it on Rowdy Burns.
I was going to say Colt, but I was like, no, it's Cole. Yeah, he does slingshot past Rowdy Burns. It's because he's using the slipstream and the additional speed he's created in that instance.
That was a great explanation, but it's much easier to understand with Sweet and Lopez.
Yeah,
on
Nicole Kidman's thighs, like as you show,
Impossible, though, to get a slipstream around a corner. Completely impossible, you know what I'm saying?
I would say completely impossible, yeah, kind of. Yeah, I mean, you're not, because A, you're not actually following behind where the the car is like actually throwing off air kind of to the sides and out, sure, and back, so you're probably actually in that air. And so it's actually – and even if you did have a slipstream, okay, so to say, it's not just the dirty air. Even if you did have a slipstream, that's suboptimal because you need that air to create the downforce that you want through the corner to help you, okay, maintain the speed. So you want to be driving through that air. You wouldn't even want that, if possible. So it's not that, I guess, cars don't punch a hole in the air through a corner as much as you would lose pace because you're not getting the grip in the tire, like you're not pushing the tires down and getting as much traction.
All right, here's my slipstream question.
Okay.
Slipstream, no doubt, makes sense. You even do it in Mario Kart if you follow close enough behind somebody. You can get going faster. But why does the slipstream still have an effect once you move your sweet and low packet outside of the slipstream? Wouldn't you just be then going into a standard
wall of air? You do jump out into a wall of air, but you've picked up pace. You've picked
momentum,
up speed.
Sure.
And you don't lose all of that speed initially. It is costing you more energy, like more kinetic energy, like it is slowing the car once you've left out, and it is, you know, you might lose a little bit of pace, but also if you're not yet at full speed, you likely in top gear can continue to accelerate with the additional speeds you've generated. You know, most of these straights aren't so long that you actually have you've hit the top speed of the car and are now just hovering at,
okay,
that. You know what I mean? So
sure,
you've normally got some pace on the top end to still gain, and you've just picked that up because you've accelerated to that point more quickly and now are building on. So let's say, you know, you're going 200 miles an hour and I'm behind you going 203 miles an hour because of the slipstream. I pull out. Even if I lose a mile per hour, you know, we're both still gaining a little bit of speed, but I'm starting at a faster pace than you as we continue to gain, if that makes sense.
That does make sense.
Okay.
I think you get a really great look at what dirty air actually looks like when they're driving on a track where it has rained and is now drying, and you see the spray shoot up. And even the spray is like crazy shapes.
Yeah, it's crazy shapes. It's actually the way the air comes off the car. And there's so much concern for it actually within the car itself, like the way parts of it are designed are meant to like throw the air over the rest of the car in a specific manner, or over the tires in a specific manner. So much goes into the aerodynamics of these cars, and which is why. But to bring it all the way back to the thing I mentioned earlier in the episode, that was the entire point of the regulations and moving to ground effect and having more of the aerodynamic downforce be generated by the floor of the car, was to reduce the impact of dirty air so you could follow more closely through corners and other places like that, in the hopes of encouraging closer racing, which I think we've seen.
This guy knows a thing or two, and that was one of those things.
That was one thing. The other thing I know, which of our great states has a unicameral legislature? There's 50 of them. There's 50 states, but only one has a unicameral.
I was like, wait, there are 50 states
that
have it?
There's only one has a unicameral legislature. Most of them have a legislature like our federal government.
I was going to say, give me a hint, but I guess it's a state.
And a, you know, they have a House
and
a Senate.
Which is it, then?
It's Nebraska.
Oh, nice. Everybody's just a corn husker in Nebraska.
Yeah, everybody's just a simple corn husker.
Just a simple corn husker.
Yeah.
We have a unicameral legislature of races left.
Good. Seamless
just
transition.
Just one race left. Friday, Saturday, Sunday in Abu Dhabi. It's the end of the Formula One season, which meant it's the end of the no-break season. Rumor has it we're going to be recording right after the race.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I think that'll be cool.
I've heard that rumor.
Yeah, got to get it in while it's spicy time.
I heard it on Italian TV earlier while I was watching.
Gazzetta dello Sport is reporting
that?
Yeah,
it was reporting that.
I don't think anybody's confirmed it. We're confirming now, though.
But right after – not right after the race. Sometime after the race when JD –
race over. We hop on our bird scooters. Race over here. See who gets here sooner. You'll know who won by who starts the podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. What time? 11:30-ish, maybe?
Sounds like
it seems
like
it'll be over.
That seems like a great time.
Probably won't be quite as dramatic as this race or the final race of last season, but hopefully we get some fireworks.
Yeah, hopefully it's fun. I mean, they have improved Abu Dhabi, and we saw this last year that Abu Dhabi was notorious for being a bad final race, right? You know what I mean? It was boring. Mm-hmm. It was hard to overtake. I think the words Kimmy used to describe it were shit. So I they made some changes to the track. Overtaking is more possible now, and it made for a more exciting race last year, as did a number of
other factors.
So hopefully we get a good one to send us off.
What else we got? We got like last race for Sebastian Vettel.
Final race for Sebastian.
Last time you're gonna see Latifi.
Last time, probably the last time you are gonna see.
Last chance he gets the spin out, man.
This is the last time to be the goat.
He had a clutch spin out last year.
He had a terrific spin out last year.
One of the best he's ever had.
A historic spin out. Maybe Mick Schumacher's last race.
True.
Maybe Daniel Ricciardo's last race.
Wow, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of guys who – I mean, maybe some of those guys will be back, but maybe they won't.
I saw people in the Slipstream team saying if Hulkenberg can come back, that means Ricciardo can certainly come back at some point.
That's fair. That's fair.
He's won races.
That's fair.
He's been on the podium.
Daniel Ricciardo is better than Nico Hulkenberg. That is fair.
We will talk about all that next Sunday, 11:30-ish. Follow Gordon on Twitter, at Mr. Gordian. I was looking at your tweets today.
What about him?
Average, man.
What?
You retweeted too much this week. I couldn't find anything. I had my original tagline for you was that you're the guy who brings us chopped cheeses back-to-back weeks. Awesome.
Okay.
Well, I changed it. Instead, you brought we talked about Airheads.
Yeah,
instead,
it's true. You know? Okay. Well, I'll try to put out some good content this week.
I love to tell people to follow you, but it's harder to recommend after a week like that. If I'm being quite honest,
I'll take this criticism on the chin, and I'll look inward first.
Suggested tweet: Airheads are better than Starburst.
Oh, you want
that's
me?
It. Just tweet that. See what kind of engagement you get. That seems like a good engagement farm.
You want me to? Okay.
Be on the lookout for that tweet from at Mr. Gordian. Airheads are better than Starburst. Follow No Dunks anywhere and everywhere on the internet at No Dunks Inc. You can email Graydon and I, nodunks@theathletic.com. Put Formula One, put No Breaks, put whatever, like something like that in the title. We will see it. Maybe we'll answer some questions. Subscribe to The Athletic at theathletic.com/nodunks. Great deals year round, including right now. But in the meantime, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. Be fast or be last.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.